Karima Brown, weekdays 8 to 10 p.m.
Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo says it's all systems go for the hearings to start as crucial confidentiality agreements have been signed. Zondo announced this afternoon that the first hearings of the state capture probe will indeed begin in August. He was giving an update on the progress made since the Commission of Inquiry into allegations of state capture commenced with its work. But before we get reaction from all our various guests, let's just quickly take a listen back to what Deputy Chief Justice Zondo had to say earlier this afternoon.
We are planning to have the first hearings in August. We have identified certain witnesses whose evidence can be heard in August. So we are planning that the first hearings would be in August. There might be an adjournment after some of those witnesses, before there are other witnesses that would come. But at this stage, we are looking at August as the month when we will have the first hearings.
That, of course, Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, who's heading up that commission. Well, I've got a panel of three guests that are joining me for their reaction. We've got David Lewis, who's, of course, from Corruption Watch. He's the executive director there. We've got Alex Mashilo from the South African Communist Party. He's the spokesperson. And then I've also got the general secretary from the Economic Freedom Fighters, Mr. Godric Gardy. Gentlemen, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Karima.
Good evening, and thank you very much, Ma'am Karim Brown.
Okay, David, let me start with you. The commission was meant to get underway with its work in March. There is a time limit. Already, Justice Zondo has said that they might have to approach the relevant authorities to get some extensions. Are you happy with the August starting date?
Well, I don't think August is when they're starting. August is when they're starting the public hearings. I think, you know, Justice Zondo outlined that, you know, quite a lot of investigative work and legal work has been done already. And, you know, controversial as this may sound, I'm not sure that the major action in this inquiry is going to be in the form of public hearings. It may very well be in the form of the kind of investigative forensic type investigative work that the investigators do in conducting the inquiry. And I mean, certain of the key witnesses, I'm sure, will be people who will not want to be heard in public or revealed or whatever. So it's the public hearings that are starting in August, but I think the work has started already.
Let me bring in Alex here. Alex, of course, as I said earlier, the work was officially meant to start in March. We now hear that we're going to have the hearings in August. And there's, of course, the possibility that many of these people will not be able to speak in public. Do you think the fact that they're not going to speak in public will take away from the credibility or the need for transparency on how this process unfolds?
I think there are two important things about the process, and I think we need to commend that. Of course, we have a political bureau meeting on Monday where we will be conducting a review of the whole progress and preparing ourselves legally and otherwise, because we think we have a particular role to play as the SACP since we were the first to call for this inquiry. The principle of anonymity and the principle of confidentiality are very important. You will recall that there was a process that was started by the ANC. People did not come up because there was no sufficient protection or guarantee for protection for people who would have volunteered to come up with information. We think that the two principles of anonymity and confidentiality are very important for people to come forward with information, knowing that they are sufficiently and adequately protected, that no one can ever step forward and do anything untoward towards them. That is very important. And I must agree with David Lewis. The basis for this inquiry is the former public protector advocate, Tulema Tonsela, state of capture report, and there are certain things in that report that do not necessarily, in fact, require a public hearing process. Those require a process of investigation, including forensic investigation. These are individuals who would have traveled to different countries to broker deals for state capturers to loot our resources.
Okay, so Alex, let's hold your thoughts there. I want to bring in the General Secretary of the Economic Freedom Fighters, Mr. Godric Gardie. Mr. Gardie, the EFF has been instrumental also in highlighting some of these issues. In fact, you have been involved in writing to various governments on some of the alleged corruption, particularly as it related to Chinese companies, American companies. What role is the EFF going to play in this commission, considering that, issues around anonymity and, of course, protection of people are going to be critical? Is the EFF going to publicly get involved in providing the commission with information?
Well, thank you very much. First thing that we need to put it very clear to the public is that we welcome the commission and its commencement of work, notwithstanding that we have our own reservations as the economic freedom fighters, because we have been in contact with the Office of the Deputy Chief Justice as a chairperson of the commission, wherein we raise our own reservations as it relates to some members of his investigative team,
yes,
because some of the members of the investigative team will have to be called in as witnesses, and it will be a conflict of role conflict in case that comes to pass. We have raised our reservations on Mr. Terence Mbembe, who is a recipient of a donation from the Guptas, and it can be. Very impossible that he will be impartial in the investigation, in that he knowingly received in excess of R1 million donation on behalf of the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, which only when we raised these issues he was trying to explain himself, and we exchanged quite a lot of correspondence with the chairperson of the commission, Deputy Chief Justice, in that regard. But we lost the argument, and we resigned our fate to the commission, but we still raise our objection on his involvement, because it can be that a recipient of looted money can also be an investigator of the looters.
Mm-hmm. You were stealing a march on my question there. I was going to ask you to share with our listeners and our guests, of course, what the content of that correspondence was that you were referring to. You're saying you've lost the argument, you've resigned yourself to the fact that he's now part of the team of investigators. Does that mean that you don't have full confidence, or do you feel that you've made sufficient, you've drawn sufficient attention to this matter, Mr. Gardie, that you will be able to watch him like a hawk and see if he does his job and stick to the brief?
Absolutely, definitely so. We will be keeping an eagle's eye on the processes, and they will give it a benefit of doubt. And we will make our own submission as and when we are ready to do so, and as and when we are accredited to do so. And we will still raise our view on the some of the investigators of the looters, and we will definitely find a way in which we will resurrect this matter with the commission during our submission. And we may as well call Mr. Terence Mbembe into the witness box.
Mm-hmm. Now, David Lewis, you have always raised the question around the fact that commissions of inquiry in and of themselves doesn't necessarily always get us to justice or the truth, and it doesn't always necessarily lead to those who are responsible, being held properly accountable. And you said it depended very much on the brief and, of course, also the parameters and scope, as well as the work of the forensic investigators. Your assessment so far of this commission, and do you still hold that belief?
I definitely hold that belief about commissions of inquiry. I mean, you know, notoriously, commissions of inquiry have been used to avoid sharp decisions and sharp findings rather than to arrive at them. But that's not always the case.
Mm.
You know, I think that in this instance, the commission can take three forms, and this is to some extent, to a significant extent, dictated by the terms of reference, but the terms, there are sort of grey areas. It can be a fact-finding inquiry, like, did Madam X appoint the minister?
Right.
Or it can be, and or it can be a policy inquiry, like, what happened and how can we prevent it from happening in the future? And or it could be a kind of a truth commission where, you know, everybody comes forward and vents their anger and frustration and outrage, all of which I share, at what has happened. And, you know, also then uses it as a political platform.
Right.
And I hope it doesn't become the latter, to be perfectly honest, you know.
In fact,
the bigger fact-finding inquiry and a policy.
Yeah. Commitment. In fact, let me pause right there, because this matter was actually raised last night by senior economist Lumkile Monde, because politicians have been raising questions about when exactly are we going to be hearing about this commission, what is its job, what is it doing. In fact, the person who raised the question first this week is the former Premier of KwaZulu-Natal, Mr. Senzo Mqunu, who's of course also a leading member of the African National Congress. And Mr. Lumkile Monde was saying that there has been informal an apparent rumor that there's behind-the-scenes maneuvering, the very point that you were warning about, David, that that it shouldn't become a platform for, politicians to play politics, and that there was the question of potential amnesty being on the table. Now, of course, we know that the issue of amnesty cannot arise, because in order to get amnesty, someone must first be found guilty. Alex Mashilo, are you hearing the same rumors that politicians are trying to look at how this can be a process where people can walk away with just making an apology and an admission?
The Deputy Chief Justice was asked that question, and he said that there was nothing like that and no one did come forward. So we have got to take his word as the word of authority. I think it is high time that we walk the talk. When we call for individuals to be brought to book, people who have looted public resources, people who have committed acts of wrongdoing, people who have been involved in state culture and offered their complicity in the corruption must be held accountable. The time for people to do wrong things and then walk away, get away with murder, I think that time is over. If you listen to Comrade Private Gordon today talk about SA Express and other state-owned enterprises, South Africa would have lost hundreds of billions in rent value terms because of this looting. And think about the consequences. VAT is up 1%, and that is just not 1%. It is 1% of the many items that we buy in our households. So the working class has to pay for people who have looted state resources. No, we cannot agree to that. People have to be held accountable.
Mr. Gardy, let me bring you in here. The possibility of the governing party, many of whose members are, of course, implicated, together with leading international auditing firms and companies, there is the very real danger that there could be behind-the-scenes attempts to try and undermine this commission. As an opposition party, what have you heard? And is this a fear that you share? Have you picked up any of this? And more importantly, are you going to insist that some of these international companies that have been complicit, some who've apologized, some who've not apologized, and some who've paid back monies, should appear before this commission?
We will insist that the commission should be held in open view, live on television, be accessible to the public, and we will encourage our people, including ourselves, will be there, and we look forward to a transparent, open commission, and we do not have any doubt to the integrity of the commission. It has our full support and blessing, except for one or two reservations that we may have, but we will work on it and we'll raise every other reservation we have, and we will exercise all options available, including maybe taking the commission to court as and when it deviates from its mandate. So we have no reason whatsoever to cast any aspersion of doubt to the commission, except for the reservations we may have raised and which we will still raise in open and transparent process.
It's just gone 24 minutes after 8 o'clock. I'm in conversation with the Executive Director at Corruption Watch, Mr. David Lewis, SACP spokesperson, Mr. Alex Mashilo, and General Secretary of the Economic Freedom Fighters, Mr. Godric Gardy. And, of course, we are getting their views and responses on the update that the Deputy Chief Justice and the head of the Commission into State Capture, Justice Raymond Zondo, had provided this afternoon. Gentlemen, we've got about 5 minutes left, and I want you to make your concluding remarks so that we can end at about 5:30 on this matter. So, David, let me start with you. What do you think are the single most important thing that this Commission of Inquiry needs to deal with?
Well, I think that the most important thing that the Commission could contribute to is to working out how this heist happened and what we need to do to prevent it from happening in the future. That having been said, I think it has some very specific mandates to find out some very specific things, and of course it must do that. The important thing is that that should not derail the criminal prosecution. There's absolutely no reason why anybody should say, and particularly why any criminal prosecutor should say, we're waiting for the outcome of the Zondo Commission. The Zondo Commission may help in the criminal prosecution process, but there's no call for it to delay the criminal prosecution process.
Absolutely. Now, Alex Mashilo, the point that David Lewis makes is obviously important. These are all parallel processes that need to happen. The one is not we're not flipping up the one for the other. They must all happen. But we've already seen in instances, let's say, for example, in the instances of the South African Revenue Services, in the handling of the Makwakwa matter by the now suspended head of SARS, that several processes were supposed to happen concurrently and happen parallel to each other. They didn't. In some instances, it led to exonerations of people who had then later resigned. We now sit with a suspended commissioner. I'm going to be speaking with Wessels Badenhorst of Hogan Lovells, as well as Paulie van Wyk, the journalist at Mavericks investigative team Scorpio, just after the break. Why is it so important that all of these processes need to happen, and of course that they can't be shortcuts or used as delaying tactics for each of these specific institutions to actually stick to the briefs and mandates that they have to carry out?
All of these processes have got to succeed. Somewhere, somehow, they are distinguished mandates. Those mandates must be fulfilled.
Yeah.
Particularly as we move forward, we have got to look into the regulations that were announced governing the operation, particularly of this Commission of Inquiry into State Capture, and ensure that nothing in those regulations prevent the report of the commissions to the commission to hold people accountable. At SARS, there are problems. There are systemic and structural matters that have got to be addressed.
There are operational matters that have to be addressed. There are things that have occurred there that should not have occurred. Those things have got to be prevented. That commission is important and has got to conduct its work so that we reposition FARS once for all, and we make sure that it is not captured and all acts of perversion involved that were committed, including the involvement of multinational corporations such as the KPMG, are held accountable.
All right. Godric, your parting comments. You've got 2 minutes for us to do so. One of the issues, of course, is that sometimes different processes bump up against each other and one has to weigh up what is the most important. Certain professions are governed by certain rules, things like client privilege and confidentiality. Others, of course, is that you cannot break the law in order to apply the law, or you cannot ignore ethics when you're looking at matters that are not clear. Really, you know, defined or where lines are blurred. How do you see the commission managing all these so that we have a situation where everybody sticks to what they have to do and it's not a question of choosing one or the other?
Well, the commission will have to accept the reality that it will be running a parallel process to the prosecution process, because the prosecution process should commence and should go on. Mr. Atul Gupta must come with all his entourage and all his people and account for what they have done to the people of South Africa in the courts. And they will have to be moving from one court to the other and also rush to the commission offices in the boardrooms to give evidence. And evidence of from both processes will have to be used in the both processes. And we look forward to the commission convening, including the cleaners, the security guards, the neighbors, and having access to the closed circuit television that was installed in that house where they used to meet with all the politicians and the corrupt people who have looted the taxpayers' money in South Africa. That should be our parting shot in the matter.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much. That's the very first time our guests stuck to their time. It's exactly 8:30. We're going to be taking a short break. When we come back, we will, of course, be talking about the question around the role of Hogan Lovells in the matter of the South African Revenue Services. I will be joined in studio by Wessels Badenhorst. He's a partner at Hogan Lovells, and by Paulie van Wyk, a journalist at Daily Maverick's investigative team, Scorpio, to discuss Hogan Lovells' role in the Jonas Makwakwa investigation.